Press 1 if you are tripping balls. Press 2 if you are planning to trip balls. Press 3 if all the balls have been tripped, yet you find yourself adrift amongst the tubes of the ether, dreaming of tubes amongst spheres that have not yet been. You pressed 1, you are tripping balls.
Relax. You're not tripping balls. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM.
I'll be your wingman. Even if it means me taking a chubby, I will suck it up.
CITR has always been your ultimate wingman, for when you have the ladies back at your place, or whatever.
To party, right? Guys like him, they don't like to party like we do. You know, we're having a lot of fun.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. We like to party.
Yeah, we like to party. Did I say that already?
I'm at war.
Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
Welcome to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners. However you've decided to spend the hour with us, we are very, very, very glad to have you. So you beautiful Vancouverites, on this cold, wet, rainy night, I hope you are snuggled up, wrapped up, nice and warm, making sure you're nice and cozy wherever you've chosen to be tonight. And I'm really glad that you're listening in. One of the things you've probably heard over the years of us doing Sexy in Van City, and before that when I used to host Juicebox Radio with Julia Saunders, always talking about having a breath practice, why it is so important. Many of the sexperts that we've had on the show over the years have thoroughly recommended it. Everybody from Dr. Ian Kerner, who wrote She Comes First and The Sex Detox, where he encourages getting in touch with your breath, is really important. Being in Vancouver, I've always thought, well, we know we are the yoga people, so we should be already in touch with our breath. But I don't think that's necessarily so. Sometimes I hear from friends that yoga is too expensive, they don't have time to work out, they don't have time to commit, and then they wonder why they're not able to connect with their life, connect with their partner, connect with themselves. And for that, I think it's really, really, really important. I've got a very special guest on tonight who I've been wanting to have on for a very, very long time, who is making sure that yoga and breath practice and better quality of life is available to all people, regardless what your socioeconomic bracket is. It's a beautiful initiative that is going on in the downtown east side. And the cool thing is it's not a charity. It's not a social enterprise. It's a community initiative, and I love it. There's over 50 yoga teachers involved in this initiative. And if you haven't figured out who I'm talking about yet, I've got the wonderful, who actually went to UBC as well at one point we were having in our pre-show chat, the wonderful Emerson from Karma Teachers. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Carolyn. It's such a pleasure to be here. Karma Teachers is just an amazing initiative, you know, with so many teachers, and we do teach people how to breathe and to stretch, you know, but most of all, to be able to give selflessly back to the community. You know, our goal is to promote that, you know, selfless giving.
And I think that starts sometimes with self, because if people can't breathe, it's really hard for people to decide how they want to give back. So whether or not it's through volunteering and teaching classes, sharing the information they have, getting involved in the community. But it starts with breath.
It does. You know,
and I know I'm speaking to the converted here. So you who runs the meditation classes at 6 a.m., which
That's right.
give you full kudos for, so especially for being here this late at night and doing that.
No, I've had a practice for quite a while now, for about 7 years, and and I've been doing that, like, you know, a morning sadhana, which is like a very early morning, you know, in the Kundalini tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, you know, someone takes a cold shower, you know, and they do the morning sadhana. But what I do is I do a little bit of an ecstatic, routine.
Mm.
So an ecstatic routine is that you meditate for about 15 minutes. And then you work on a chakra, for example, if you're working on fear or your root chakra, then you shake that part.
Nice.
You know, and then you do a little shake up. And then when people ask me, how come I get all of this energy? I'm like, well, I meditate and I shake a lot.
And I'm studying Qigong, as you know, right now.
Yes.
So I'm just listening and nodding away over on this side.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons why one of these days we need a camera in here. I know it's radio, but it's all the conversation that happens off. But shaking is so good for just getting rid of excess chi, stagnant energy, and just getting the energy flowing through the chakra system.
It is, you know, and it's been in really, really old traditions. You know, in the shamanistic tradition, it also dates really, really old. Like, even dancing is actually older than language. Did you know that?
I didn't, but it doesn't surprise me. That's so cool.
Yeah. So shaking almost precedes dancing. It's the same thing almost. Like, you know, like there's shaking and there's dancing and there's jumping. And if you look at a lot of dynamic meditation, it's with movement, you know, and there's something kind of like really primal about it. There's just something that's very primordial.
I can see that. And actually, if I think about it, with just other animals, like besides human beings, a lot of, if I watch a cat or a dog when they get mad, they kind of shake themselves and it's like,
that's
kind
right.
of thing. Even horses, actually. So
yes.
Where they let that go. And as human beings, I think it's so cool that you bring that to people to let them literally shake off. And the fact that it's been around for thousands of years.
Yes, what usually happens when you let go, it's about letting go.
Mm-hmm.
So having that ecstatic yoga is about letting go and surrendering and just allowing everything to be, you know, and when you let go and when you completely drop that inhibitions, you come to your ecstatic self, you know, and what we're doing basically is we're just unblocking a lot of the barriers that is our real state is just being kind of like really blissful and happy. And then we put all the past thinking and the future stuff, you know, and then all of a sudden we're angry or we're really cluttered, you know, really blockages. You know how that is.
It makes I do. I believe me, on a personal level, sometimes I get blocked as well. But I think just in general, in this day and age, we're on all the time. We've got our smartphones. I think we process a lot constantly. I just think of our liver chi sometimes, because it's just like all the decisions we're making, etc. And it can be really stressful, where I wouldn't be surprised, and again, I'm not a medical expert, but I can imagine our cortisol levels are probably through the roof. And with yoga, it's so beneficial because the shaking especially, just to let go of stuff, but also to fill up and align the chakra system. So then that way you can reach that ecstatic state of bliss.
Yes. You know what, with the way that I do the chakra system, so the bottom, like it's almost kind of like going upwards. So you're letting go of the fear, which is the sacral chakra,
the root chakra,
and then you go back, you go upwards to letting go of disappointments, and then shame, and then the heart is letting go of grief, and then the throat is letting go of the lies that you tell yourself.
Ooh,
yes, that's a big thing, right?
It is.
Like we have this inner dialogue that we do all the time. You know, I'm not good enough. You know, all that kind of stuff, and it goes up to the third eye, which is the letting go of separation. We lose connectedness, you know, I want to talk about this actually. You know what I noticed in yoga studios, you know, when I was going to yoga studios, is people would use their fob key to sign in, take their mats, unroll the mat, do the yoga practice, and then roll the mat and leave without making any connections with the person right beside them. Have we become that society that you know, that it's just become, might as well practice at home? If you're not, you know, yoga's about union. It's about connection.
It's about community.
It's about community, right? So when people come to a studio, I'm hoping that it's changing. But when I started going to studio, I had a daily practice at home. I basically had a videotape and I had Gurmukh, you know. And, and I did it like religiously for about a year. And, you know, I did it at 5 o'clock in the morning. So when I thought that, you know, that I started going to a yoga studio, I was the odd one. I was saying, like, talking to people, "Hi, how are you doing?" You know, it's just like nice to be, you know, in a space with other people practicing, inhaling the same breath, the same air, collectively doing that.
Yeah.
But what is lacking, I guess, in the community is that has it become such a workout, such a trend that people are just coming into a yoga studio to do the workout.
Mm-hmm.
And forgetting about the union, the breath, the community. But I'm sure there's a lot of beautiful yoga studios that encourage that community feeling. But what we do at Karma Teachers is that we just have this, first of all, it's free or by donation. So there's no barrier when people can't afford it.
Which is fabulous.
Which is amazing. And then what we also did is just to completely allow people to be able to practice as we expanded it to a daily practice. So every day there's a class that's free. So right now we just introduced the morning classes. So we have about 4 classes per day that is free. So if you can't make it in the afternoon, so there's no excuse not to come in.
Mm-hmm.
But the great part about it is that when people actually go to the studio, they talk. I don't know what happens. There's something about a studio when it's very, how do you call it? Very raw.
Mm.
Without the shiny shininess of it. You know, there's something that happens. Especially when people walk through that back alley.
Yes.
go, you've been there.
I have.
And then you go upstairs. It's like an oasis in the downtown east side.
Yeah.
And people talk to each other and friendships have developed. More than friendships have developed.
That sounds like there's some stories there,
yes.
too. So there might be some truth to, I've had some of my friends saying that it's yoga class is a good place to meet people sometimes. So with that.
I feel like I'm like the papa of a whole bunch of, you know, like connections. Some yoga teachers, you know, some students, you know, but it's, again, it's about unity. It's about union, right? So when people are letting go, you know what, when you go on the mat, it's almost like you're releasing a lot of stuff, you know. So and after, you know, like you usually have the yoga bliss afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And some people go for tea, you know, some people go for conversations. It just sparks up beautiful friendships and maybe sometimes beyond friendships, the connections in the yoga studio. I've seen a lot of yoga hookups.
I'd be very curious about what percentage, if you were teaching a partner yoga class, how many, because of the fact, just in terms of the breath connections, it's very tantric in terms of just to breathe, especially when you're doing lifts, etc., together.
We had a partner yoga class, you know, and it was very, there was some element of tantra there. It was just like a very connectedness.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, especially that the playing of the strength and the vulnerability and all that interplay, you know, like, you know, when you're getting lifted up by the feet, you know, and you're completely just, you know, expanding your chest, you know, and, you know, just having all of the inhibitions go.
Hmm.
There's just something that is just so human about it, but at the same time, the connection is deeper. You know, when you're holding each other, when you're lifting each other up, you know, and there's something beautiful, some beautiful connection that happens. But sometimes what I notice is when I teach an ecstatic yoga class, and some people get really, really shocked. And I thought twerking in my class. Do you know what twerking is?
I think of Miley Cyrus, and I have a hard time actually visualizing in the same. So.
But you know what I did is because I've been teaching it, actually, I teach a pretty big class with about 150 kids between the ages of 14 to 21. So about a year ago, they've been asking me, why didn't you add twerking to ecstatic yoga? Can you add some twerking, 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 twerking? So I thought it was first, you know, I thought it was like a drug term. You know? I'm like, you know what, these kids, you know, like. So I Googled it and I realized that actually twerking goes way, way back. Way, way back. You know, like even Beyonce sang about it. Even African. It's just a way of expression.
Mm.
So when Miley did that twerking, I wanted to reclaim it.
Oh, I don't blame you. So
so what I do is I do a lot of kind of like root work, you know, like a lot of movements of the hips, kind of like getting all of that, you know, stagnant energy in the hips and, you know, all that blockages. When you have a lot of fear, it blocks you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not able to enjoy any kind of carnal pleasures. You know, you're not able to completely let go. So when I reclaim that, what I basically tell people is to let go of any fear, any kind of anything that's blocking you.
Mm.
And then they completely let go. And then at the end, they have this kind of like blissful, almost orgasmic like look on their face, because it's just a way of releasing that pent up. In our society, we pent a lot of shit up.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. I think just on a day to day, I think it's almost a natural reaction when something scary happens. It's the and then the sharp inhalation and just holding the breath. And as well as that, in terms of sexuality as well, there mm-hmm. is a lot of sexual violence and abuse in our society yeah. on a global level. I believe the last stats I saw, it's 1 out of 3 women and 1 out of 6 men have experienced sexual violence before the age of 18, according to Amnesty International. So it's really, really, really high. And I think whenever there's trauma that happens to the body, it tends to lock in. And so being able to breathe in those spots and shed light and be able to get literally right down to the root and release, I can see why that would be just that beautiful bliss, being able to let that go.
Yeah, you know what? And I see that, you know, like a lot of people actually that have sexual trauma don't even remember it because they've repressed it so much.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, you know, when you see someone in a yoga class just completely crying, they don't even know what's happening. It's a form of healing. Yeah. One time I had a class that I basically what I did is with the younger people is I asked them to think about all of the negative stuff that they tell themselves. Mm-hmm. The bullying that they do, you know, and we do a lot of that to ourselves.
Yes, we do.
We're the biggest bully mm-hmm. of ourselves, you know, and of course there's the outside bullying. So what I wanted to do with a lot of the younger, especially the transgendered youth that I teach, you know, male to female especially, you know, it's just very, they do a lot of that. So what I did is I basically told them to close their eyes and then use their fingers as scissors. It's a kundalini thing, actually. So to cut those words that they say to themselves and all of that derogatory term, all of the... and I've done that too, you know, like everyone does that term that I'm not good enough, or you're like you're fooling yourself, mm-hmm. just this talking. So when I did that, and I also played like a very electro version of Beautiful by Christina Aguilera.
Nice.
You know, and so when people were able to dance and release, and you know, and then at the end they were singing it, and then there's a lot of crying that's happening. And in our society, you know what, we're not allowed to be sexual, you know, like, you know, we're not, like, especially the younger, especially the transgendered. Imagine this transgendered youth, you know, that is just going through that transformation.
Mm-hmm.
They're not allowed to act feminine, you know, and in our society, I think I heard this question before, or this statement before, that how come it's okay for women to wear suits and it's powerful? But when a man starts wearing a woman's outfit, it's funny. And like it's made fun of. And it shows that inequality that we have.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's just...
No, that's a really interesting point, because I hadn't really thought of it.
Yeah.
When I think of a man in a dress, I know it's going to sound... Maybe it's my half-Scottish roots. Yes. I go straight to the kilt, which I personally think men are totally hot in kilts. I like seeing their calves.
Yes.
Men have nice calves, so, and I'm all for looking at them. So.
And it should be that way.
Mm-hmm.
It should be that way, but I come from the Philippines, where... the transgendered, you know, they're ridiculed and made fun of. It's almost like a comedic thing, you know, when someone is, you know, walking down the street, you know, with a woman's dress. It's not seen as regal or not seen as gorgeous. It's almost kind of like, oh, that's kind of funny. That's kind of queer. right? You know, that's kind of what happens in our society. So I can just imagine, you know, with the transgender youth that I teach. So one day, what I did was I got about 8 of them, and I said, I want you to dress up in heels. You know, for the first portion of the class, you know, we're going to dress up. You're going to dress up in heels, and dress up in a dress, and I just want you to dance around. You know, and then a lot of them were quite liberated from that. You know, it was quite liberating. And they asked me, how come you're not dressed up in heels? I'm like, I look really funny. But I can't really walk. But you guys, you know, you gals can.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think yoga can do. You know, when you can add breath work into it, at the same time have that creativity to allow your audience to be who they are.
Yeah.
And not, you know, because yoga for all of a sudden became a little bit Lululemon up for quite a while. Have you noticed that? Nothing wrong with that. You know what? Some people, you know, that's completely all right too. But there should be an alternative with when people are able to express themselves.
Yeah.
You teach pole dancing.
I do. Yes. I teach pole dancing for fitness.
I want to hear about that. Well, what kind of liberation happens in pole dancing?
With pole, the reason I fell in love with it is because I do a lot of work with, as you know, with women and children on the downtown east side. And around 2004, I got a press release about pole dance classes starting. So I was a little bit curious. I was intrigued and I was terrified I was going to have to show up and be naked and be in heels. Had no idea what it was going to be. And went and literally fell in love with it. For me, it was the first time I'd been to a class where it was a dance class and it wasn't competitive. I did ballet for years as a child. Mm. So I was used to dance being, in a lot of ways, about competition as opposed to it being an expression of freedom, expression of who one is. And the reason why I loved it was it was this beautiful community of women, still is, and with that as well, two of the women I interviewed for the piece, one of them, she and her sister had taken their stepfather to court because of sexual abuse, and because they had won the case, and the mother was still in denial, she stopped talking to her daughters, and so one of the daughters was taking class with us, and she said that for her sense of sensuality had been stripped away so early on. And pole gave her a safe space where she was able to explore her sense of sensuality and take ownership of something that had literally been taken so early on. I also had a couple other women in class who were mothers, very young moms. Mm-hmm. And for them, one of them was quite funny. She's like, you know, I gave birth to a miracle. And now I've turned into this milk machine. All I exist for now is feeding. And what pole did for her was it helped restore her to herself, where she could be a mom, but she was also a wife. She was also a career woman. She had lots of different roles in her life, not just mom, where for a while she just felt like a mom. So that was really healing. And this may sound strange, but at the time when I started pole, it was very exploitive in Vancouver still, and it was very taboo. And I had a lot of people asking me, are you crazy, you know, teaching this stuff?
Because when did you take it? How long ago?
Back in 2004 is when I originally got certified as an instructor. I was one of the first instructors certified in Canada. And I liked the idea of taking something that can be seen as exploitive, but using it as a tool to empower.
Reclaiming it.
Yes, reclaiming it. And also, in reality, what the other piece I love about it is, as adults, now there's more, now that it's 2013, but back then, we didn't, at least it wasn't where I could get a class for, like, say, suspension yoga, unless I was going out to Vancouver Circus School, which I wasn't familiar with at the time, to go and do a trapeze class or an aerial hooper or a, I forget what it's called, with the fabric coming down, this aerial dance.
Silks. Oh, they're amazing, yeah.
But there wasn't, at least I hadn't found where you could take classes for that at that stage. So as an adult, there wasn't that opportunity where you got to play, where you got to pick your feet up off the ground and play the way you do when you're a kid, where you think it's that beautiful fearlessness of being able to hang upside down on the jungle gym when you're at the playground, and having that freedom to do it. And as an adult, because of course our bodies have changed through puberty, it doesn't quite feel the same. So being able to watch somebody's eyes at the beginning of class where it's like, hi, welcome to class, my name's Caroline, this is what we're going to learn today, and just watching those expressions where they're like, are you crazy? I'm not going to be able to do that. And then by the end of the first time they pick their feet off the ground and their eyes just lighting up, it's the same thrill I get from doing all the work I do with the women and children in the downtown east side. It's just a different tool to empower people.
Well, you know what? I think that you and I are fearless, you know, because we you know, running a nonprofit or
a community initiative.
A community, you know, and because people have always said to me, like, you know what, I've always wanted to do something like that. But I think what happens with us, like, do you like roller coasters?
I love roller coasters.
Okay, I think that's what it is. I have that. You know, like even teaching ecstatic yoga, you know, it's almost very fearless, because I was in the beginning, I was kind of like thinking, you know, what's the yoga community going to say about this ecstatic yoga, this kind of format that is very, very modern, you know, like I play music that sometimes, you know what, is just very dubstepy and, you know, like electro and and people might think it's not really traditional, but to me, it's actually, you know what, meeting people where they're at.
Yes.
So that's what you're doing, is you're meeting people where they're at with pole dancing. And I've always seen it as a powerful, but, you know, in our society, in our patriarchal society, of course, that gets taken into a bar, you know. And but I was researching, actually, I saw someone on Facebook that there's this, like, 1940s video. I should send it to you.
Okay.
And it's a yogi with a pole, and he's making all of this kind of, like, you know, like he's stepping on the top of the pole, he's on the beach, you know, and it was just something there was just something really magical about it, and something really zen almost, right? Because they were doing this, you need a lot of power and control to be able to, you know, do the pole dancing. So I applaud you for that. That's quite amazing. And even, you know what, burlesque is another one that I'm beginning to see as, like, quite powerful for women to be able to express.
Burlesque and boylesque as well.
Boylesque, yeah.
It's quite lovely. We actually used to have one of our DJs and producers for one of the shows, Teddy Smooth, who used to have Cabaret Radio on Tuesday nights.
Nice.
He's now in Toronto, so we miss him very much. But he was probably the first boylesque performer I ever saw, and he made me laugh so much. But it was also incredibly sexy. So
I've seen a drag king boylesque.
Very cool.
Yes, in Toronto.
Nice. I was going to say, I haven't seen that in Vancouver. Even for
amazing events
like Diva's Den, where they're supporting for the Diva, the Dyke March and things at the Penthouse, which they do that once a year. I've never seen. Yes. That's very cool.
No, but you know what, with the what I really love about the yoga community is that it exposes me to so many different stuff. You know, there's just it's just like a bunch of open-minded people.
Yes.
You know, that are ready to explore, you know, and just to be able to express. You know, and I think that it will just keep on growing. You know, like, there's many different kind of formats of yoga that's beginning to happen. And to me, you know what, I really respect the traditional yoga as well. I really respect the lineages. I respect that old tradition. But to me, yoga means union. And when you're connecting with your breath, and when you're connecting with the community, when I see that happening, you know, in a big group, you know, where everyone is just having this collective experience, a union with the breath, with each other, I think it's just quite transcending. You know, and I think that we're in a time right now that we are on our cell phones, on our Twitter accounts and Facebook, and we don't even have 5 minutes, you know, and then we're already kind of like picking up, looking at a different post or updating a Instagram
yes.
or something like that, or our life is almost designed. So when we have an hour of communion, you know, with the community, it's just so powerful. And any kind of format that happens, like, I think that pole dancing is a part of that union, you know.
Thank you. Yeah. It's interesting. I've had, once I had Dr. John Gray on our show, from who wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, or his more recent book, Venus and Fire, Mars and Ice. Mm-hmm. And he mentioned that he loved yoga for different, and it was interesting because he found when he did it, he practiced usually on his own. Mm-hmm. And he found it helped fill him out, basically, because cortisol levels are so high. Mm-hmm. It helped increase his testosterone level, where it was what it should normally be for a man. Whereas for women, he found sometimes the classes, it actually increased the level of oxytocin, which I always call that drug. Love hormone, I should say, as opposed to a drug. But it's, you know, it's what, you know, when you see a baby for the first time, mm-hmm. and
your eyes light up, yes, that kind of thing. Yes.
You fall in love with immediately. Yes. It's that. Or, you know, wanting to just, you know, just to cuddle after sex. And for men, when there's high levels of oxytocin in the system, it knocks them out sometimes. So, which is why sometimes I've heard people snoring beside me in corpse pose. So, where I think if they've hit a good spot in a yoga class as well, where all of a sudden it's like, hey.
You know, there's in our community, there's a lot of hugs that happens, you know, at the end. You know, there's a lot of talking and people are less closed up. You know, they are really open, you know, at the end, and they talk freely. But what's happening in the yoga community, and I'm going to tell you something that I've been noticing, is there's a lot of male coming in.
That's fantastic.
Especially at Karma Teachers. You know, like one time, I think one of Shannon Clough posted something. She's a mentor of a lot of teachers.
Okay.
That she's beginning to notice a quality of the teacher's practice.
Hmm.
It's becoming more fluid. You know, the practice is getting a bit deeper. You know, it's just the quality. But I'm beginning to see quantity. You know, a lot of... If you look at Karma Teachers, about 2 months ago, before we added all of these morning classes, we actually had more male teachers.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's a very rare for a studio. And then at one time I looked in our studio, I think there was about 20 people, and then about 17 were men. And it was just really bizarre for me. It was just really bizarre. And it was just, and the practice was very, very active. But at the same time, it was very mindful. You know, there was just this, you know, like in the past, people assumed that yoga was just for, it's a female dominated. If you go all the way back, you know, in the Brahmins and, you know, like in the Vinyasa practice.
It was men, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was men.
Yes. Even pole dancing was men at one point. So I believe it was either India or China, actually, originally, where I believe they had wood poles. And it was very, very different. And they could do some incredible things that...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did see that video. And yeah, and it was just really... I was like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
It was just quite fascinating. And, you know, just the strength, you know, and the control and, you know... And I can see it being very sensual, because it's a very strong practice, but it's also very fluid. There's a fluidity in it. You know, there's especially, and what's good about the fluidity is it because it comes with the confidence of the performer.
Yes.
You know, and I should come to your class.
You should. I'll have to give you some more details about that afterwards.
Yeah. So.
In terms of Vancouver, we're known as kind of a Lululemon city in general, and it makes me happy that, and not that there's anything wrong with Lululemon, because I'm really proud of Chip Wilson, who started and just really encouraged, and I have to say, I do like the pants. They make my butt look amazing, so I'll be honest, but with that as well, I was actually thinking as we were speaking about it, do you think part of it was... I found when yoga, at least for me, when it hit, was probably about maybe 10 or 12 years ago, And it was when there's Bikram classes everywhere. And perhaps that was part of it. I always thought of Bikrams as almost like a militant yoga, where it's that. Plus, I couldn't go in the room without dry heaving because of the smell. So I used to always have peppermint oil that I used to stick under my nose. So until I started sweating profusely enough and could smell my own sweat, and I was okay with that, I wasn't dry heaving because of the smell of the carpet and everything else. So I'm wondering if that was part of the reason why there's that trend of not talking in class at some point.
Well, you know what?
Sorry for those Bikram people out there. Love you. I give you kudos for going to the class and being able to do that. I prefer moksha if I'm going to go. It's just the carpet on the floor just grosses me out. So...
No, I tried Bikram, and you know what, and to each its own, you know, and but I really found it very militant as well. Mm-hmm. But I know some people that are lovely, lovely people that loves it, and I applaud them, and it's great. But I think my first time was, I was like, and I was really excited, you know, like I got like a month, I think it was a month pass or something, because you know what, I wanted to try it, you know, and I couldn't do it. And the first time that I wanted to drink water, they told me not to drink water. So I'm like,
Which is so different than any other fitness class as well.
Yeah.
We're going to take a really quick short break.
Sure.
And when we come back, we're going to be chatting more. You are listening Excellent. To Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be right back.
I'm at war. I'm at war with myself. I'm at war with you. I'm at war with everybody. That's why I don't do drugs, because I don't want to be numb. I want to feel the pain. I want the clarity of the challenge. I want to win. I want to kick in the head. I want to tear the throat box out. I want to smash in the lungs. I want to kick in the rib cage. I want to split the spine. And I want to use your phone, make love to your wife, sister, eat your dog, and leave your house with a good cassette.
CITR 101.9 FM. Where there's just a little bit of Kim Fowley in each and every one of us.
No, I don't think so.
Last year, over 650 BC teens aged out of foster care without a permanent family.
Adoption is not just for babies. Teens need families too. Only 24 teens in BC were adopted last year.
November is Adoption Awareness Month. To find out more about adopting a teen, contact the Adoptive Families Association of BC. Call 1-877-ADOPT-07 or visit us at bcadopt.com.
Explore the arts this winter at League Square Community Arts Village. They're offering an exciting lineup of visual and performing arts programs this winter, including capoeira, Brazilian dance, and martial arts for 3 to 12-year-olds. Parent and taught jam sessions, the iGirl Empowerment and Art Workshop for ages 9 to 12, and adult classes in digital photo editing and photography, just to name a few. Registration is available online at experienceit.ca or call 604-927-7529 for a full listing of arts and culture programs in Port Coquitlam. For more information on Lee Square, please visit portcoquitlam.ca/arts or call 604-927-8400.
She'll make a lovely doll after I finish with you. I told you your webs were useless.
Spider-Man! He's melting!
It's too hot. It's too hot. Something must have hit the control lever. Turn it off.
Want to save energy and keep yourself comfortable? Turn down your thermostat 1 degree Celsius or consider installing a programmable thermostat. If every household in BC with electric space heating turned down their heat by 1 degree for 8 hours a day, it would save enough electricity to power Science World for over 75 years. This Power Smart Play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
We're back in Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. And if you're just joining us, we are talking about breath practice. We're talking about yoga. We've been talking about pole dancing as well. And I've got the lovely, the fabulous Emerson from Karma Teachers on. So it's very exciting to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me. We're just having this amazing conversation about the yoga community. Stretchy pants.
That is very true.
So going back to our conversation, I do think, yeah, you know, that maybe the Bikram kind of like, you know, did have that, you know, I love some people from Bikram, you know, and mm-hmm. you know, and I love people that practice and no judgment mm-hmm. whatsoever. But there's many different kind of people. Some people perhaps like practicing in a studio that you don't talk to each other. You know, that you just don't look at each other because you're really concentrated in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're doing a sequence of poses that's very, you know, very, how would you call that?
Concentrated. It's probably the delicate way because I'm thinking of any of the ones where it's the T poses or anything like that where you're, and for those listeners out there yes. wondering, because I know I'm not saying it correctly, but where you take the step forward and then basically you make sure your leg goes back and your upper body
yes.
goes forward and you're just balanced like that.
Like an airplane.
Yeah,
yes.
the airplane. Yes. Thank yes. you. Because I know I have to stare at a spot on the wall so I don't fall. And if I'm chatting, I would not be able to hold that. I'm not
yes.
that strength. And dancer pose, same thing, where
that's right.
I need to really focus and have my hand really focusing on my fingers and just above my fingers so I can focus and align it so it's in line with my third eye.
Nice.
So,
well, my first practice actually was, it was kind of, I was meditating first. You know, I discovered meditation and, and then I kind of like had this, you know, that, you know what, do you meditate?
I do.
So you have this kind of like clarity.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my clear moments was I had to add a physical aspect to my spiritual meditation practice.
Mm.
And then I had to open up a center. So this was about 3 years ago. This is a little bit of story about Karma Teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So the next day, this is after a 4-day meditation, I told everyone in my family, I was still in Ontario, and I said to them, I am going to start practicing yoga. And I'm going to open up a yoga center or a wellness center. And they're like, well, you don't even know how to practice yoga. I'm like, I'll start. And then I found my mother-in-law actually had a VHS tape of Gurmukh. trapped in a VCR for 4 years. So I liberated it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I started, and I really, really liked Kundalini. Kundalini to me was just something that was just really powerful, very detoxifying, and there was something about it. So I just did it for every day religiously, and so I thought that I was a master of yoga because I was doing this Kundalini VHS tape, and you know for a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was just like I have mastered it. My friend is Gurmukh, and I had this VHS tape, and every
mm-hmm.
morning I did. I'm like, I'm really rocking this now. I'm really, really, you know, this
yeah.
is something that I'm really good at. And then my mom had brain cancer. Did I tell you about this story?
You did.
Yeah. So my mom had brain cancer, so I taught her a little bit of breath work, a little bit of Kundalini. And then after she would go through radiation, she would say that her pain was okay, like it was gone. So she would tell people that it was yoga that really helped her. So, and then I think after quite a while, I thought I was ready to become a yoga teacher, and my mom gave me the blessing to become a yoga teacher, and it came all the way here.
Wow.
So in my mind, Kundalini is the only yoga. So I never thought that Hatha was yoga, Vinyasa was yoga. I thought they were Pilates.
Wow. So what makes Kundalini, because I've always thought of it as a deeper yoga in many ways, but I've also just taken Vinyasa Flow as some half the work as well. Obviously, I've tried Bikrams. Yes. but with Kundalini, what makes that one more different?
It's more of an inner work.
Okay.
It's more of an inner work. It's more of a meditative journey.
And
there's also a lot of benefits for your internal organs. You know, like you work with some kriyas, which is a series of movements. So, for example, there's a kriya for letting go. There's a kriya for illumination. There's a kriya to detoxify, you know, your liver.
Mm-hmm.
There's a kriya almost for anything. There's even the joke that there's a kriya for whitening teeth. I don't know if it's true, but...
of course, I'm very curious about that.
And there's also, there's a lot of spine. What it does basically is you're trying to raise up that the Kundalini energy from the bottom of your spine,
mm-hmm.
so that it spirals, and then you have like an experience of a Kundalini rising or a samadhi, you know, that you have this. And I've had some of that experience, you know, and so I was doing this training with Gurmukh at home. So I came to Vancouver and... because I wanted to take the teacher training.
Mm-hmm.
And I was planning to go to take Kundalini, you know. But for some odd reason, you know what, I wanted to reach more of... I wanted to try other things. I'm always an adventurer.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out that Semperviva had Gurmukh as one of their guest teachers.
I'm just getting chills. That's cool.
Yeah, so you know what? So instead of going to the Kundalini, the teacher training... I took a Hatha teacher training because Gurmukh had a spot. Like she was doing a Kundalini portion.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, when Gurmukh came, you know, I sat in front of her and I had a Kundalini experience. I had one of those beautiful experiences. And I talked to her. I had my picture taken and I was just gushing. And she talked about when she was brand new to yoga. She had Yogi Bhajan is the founder of Kundalini Yoga.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very masculine kind of like yoga, but there's a very feminine to it. So I really like it that it's balanced.
Mm.
So what Gurmukh does is she adds a lot of divine goddess energy to it.
Nice.
Yes. So she had this very healing kind of like, you know. And then she talked about she used to put a coffee tin, you know, in front. And she would just teach yoga and she would just get donations and... So that kind of like inspired me. I'm like, you know what? I can do that. You know, I can, you know, I really want to teach and I really want to express this, you know, this kind of giving.
Mm-hmm.
For me, teaching yoga is a form of giving. You know how it is with pole dancing as well. It's a form of giving, right?
It is. It is.
And I wanted to just be able to give it selflessly. So when I open up Karma Teachers, my sister-in-law said to me, "Oh my God, Emerson, what you said about 3 years ago of opening up, you know, adding a physical aspect to your practice,
mm-hmm.
and then adding a and then opening a center, it all came true." I'm like, "Yeah, that's right." So I was walking one day, you know, and then I realized that the physical aspect of my spiritual practice actually is not the teaching of yoga, but the act of selfless giving.
Hmm.
And the opening of the center is actually not the space, not the karma teacher's space, but the opening of the heart.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's what it is. There's actually a deeper meaning to it. So now I see karma teachers as a bigger force.
Hmm.
It's just something that's needed in our community.
Very much. You've got a campaign coming up soon, and I don't know if you want to share
and
kind of tease our listeners a little
I just actually came up with a campaign yesterday. So I wanted to raise money for Karma Teachers through Indiegogo, a crowdfunding.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been thinking about it ever since, probably about a year and a half now, because people have been telling me, why don't you do a Kickstarter campaign, Indiegogo campaign, and I think I was almost ready about 3 months ago.
Okay.
But out of respect for another studio that's trying to raise money, I said, you know what, I'll hold off, you know, so that they can have, you know, the full run of their campaign.
Yes.
But I'm actually glad that I did not do it at that time, because I was just planning to sell, kind of like to have like perks as memberships.
Mm-hmm.
Like someone would have a month membership and they can pay like $50 or $100 or something. At the same time, they're sending another person for free.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought of another idea of engaging the community. I was thinking, you know what? The greatest asset of Karma Teachers is teachers. So I'm going to invite about 108 yoga teachers and any teachers to be able to donate a private lesson for an hour, or a mentorship for an hour, or a place at their workshop or a retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to do this campaign based on that one. It's just presenting the yoga teachers of Vancouver, because I believe in oneness and I believe that we're working for the same cause.
Yeah.
And so far 48 right now, 48 teachers have said yes.
Wow.
So the way that's going to work is that we're going to try to raise $20,000 so that we can open up Karma Teachers more to, we're beginning to develop programs like Kundalini for mental health and addictions.
Wow.
We had an eating disorder class before. We had kids with autism class before and at-risk youth. But I wanted to expand it more to, trauma, PTSD. I wanted to open up to Beauty Night,
which we're very excited about.
So excited about, you know, to have this space for women,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to have, you know, there's always power in the community of women. I strongly believe in that, because actually Gurmukh, which is my teacher, I was kind of excited to say to her, I'm like, I really want to come to your prenatal, and then because I wanted to be able to take prenatal,
mm-hmm.
and then she looked at me and she said, I really respect that, Emerson, but this is a woman's only class. Because there's power in the I know that you have feminine energy, but there's power when it's all women.
Oh.
You know, so I wanted to create these classes that we don't even have a donation box, that is just absolutely for free,
mm-hmm.
so that we don't have that barrier. Money is a barrier to yoga, and it shouldn't be that way. They can pay it forward. I believe in the exchange of karma.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that if someone takes yoga, you know, especially in a space like Karma Teachers, that they blossom and they become a gift to humanity. If they become a gift, they become a present.
Mm-hmm.
They unfold, they unwrap, and then they realize that they're the present. So what I'm doing right now, with the help of hopefully 108 yoga teachers and teachers like yourself, is to offer this campaign so that someone can support us and have a perk of a one-on-one private lesson with a teacher that they like, perhaps a teacher that they look up to,
mm-hmm.
a teacher that they want to have a mentorship with. So for about $150, they can have this, and also send two people to Karma Teachers for a month.
Which is fantastic.
Yes, and then I'm also talking to yoga studios all over the city to offer a month pass, so that one can, say, pay $200 and at the same time send two people to Karma Teachers for free. And also the other one that I'm really excited about is I'm going to have a spot there that if someone can donate $5,000, they can open up a Karma Teacher anywhere.
Wow.
So it could be in Ottawa, it could be in Jamaica, it could be in India.
Wow.
It's already there probably, but you know, so, but you know, but I've been getting a lot of inquiries on how to open up a Karma Teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, one opened up in Mexico already, so there's a Karma Teachers Mexico right now.
Wow.
So I wanted to be able to, so with $5,000, what people can do is they can rent a space for about 3 months. So Karma Teacher basically is all volunteer teachers. It's mm-hmm. teachers that wants to give back. So all they really need basically is a space, maybe some insurance.
Yes. Insurance is a good thing when you're teaching people to get in touch with their bodies.
That's correct.
And their soul. So.
That's correct. And it just becomes this beautiful community. I'm beginning to see this community that we started, you know, mm-hmm. At Karma Teachers, as something that just keeps on growing. It's almost like infinite. It's just this movement that's bigger than all of us.
Mm-hmm.
It's just bigger than all of us. We have so many beautiful stories. You know, if you go to Karma Teachers Facebook, sometimes you'll hear about these beautiful stories about the many unfoldings. And Now I see the downtown east side as not as the most drug addicted or the poorest postal code. I see it as the place with the most transformation can happen. You know, and I was in a sweat lodge, in a healing lodge, in a prayer lodge on Sunday. And in the middle of the downtown east side, you know, and I came inside, you know, the lodge. And then I heard the prayers of many women. It was a co-ed. It was just a very special, usually it's segregated.
Mm-hmm.
But this time it was very special. And I heard the many cries of the downtown east side women that prayed about, you know, how can we, praying about healing of trauma and sexual abuse and addictions and just, and then I was sobbing at one point, you know, because I was hearing all of this. I realized how my prayers were so small compared to the prayers of the downtown east side. And I was just completely, you know, and I'm like, I have to do something. You know, I'm in a space, I'm in a place that I can start something. And that's when the $20,000, I'm like, if I can raise $20,000, if I can raise, and I realized that I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it, all the teachers that are going to come together, even if I raise $5,000, you know what, but my goal is $20,000 so that we can open Karma Teachers for a couple of years without worrying about rent.
Yes.
Because right now, we don't have any government funding.
Yeah.
You know how it is.
I 100% understand.
So every month I've been kind of like, you know what, I am just going to put, you know, half of that rent from my own pocket. And it's beginning to hurt a little bit.
Yes.
You know, but there are months that were sustainable,
mm-hmm.
which is really amazing. But I want to take away that worry about money so I can really, you know what, reach out to the communities that we want to serve. We had Butterflies in Spirit. Have you heard about Butterflies in Spirit?
You were mentioning them for women who have a loved one who is either a missing or murdered woman.
In the downtown mm-hmm. east side, there's a... we're not aware of a lot of things that happen. There's a lot of murdered
yes.
and victimized women in the downtown east side. So the Butterflies in Spirit are sisters and daughters of women. And they needed a space so that they can... Again, women joining together. What they do is they rehearse. They're dancers.
Mm.
So they dance and they express. And at the end, they lay down on the floor and they get covered up to raise awareness for all the women that have passed away.
Wow.
And because of the lack of funding, unfortunately, we could not house them. I think we had them for about 5 or 6 months.
Wow.
So I want to bring them back.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to bring them back, and with the help of everyone kind of like rallying around. So I really want to get all of the yoga community, or even beyond the yoga community, even teachers that teach us dance. You know, my vision for Karma Teachers is, aside from opening it all over the world, you know, like having a city open up a Karma Teachers, I also want other teachers to be able to experience the giving back aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it could be pole dancer teachers, it could be teachers that acting teachers. We actually have an acting lesson teacher that's teaching. There's a voice lesson teacher that's coming.
Mm-hmm.
So I just really want to create this campaign around that. And another one that Karma Teachers that just happened actually just yesterday is that I've been teaching the meditation, so I've opened up Dharma Teachers.
Mm.
So I want to be able to invite all of these meditation teachers that wants to give back and really open up the space for meditation.
That's fantastic.
And the thing that happened today, there's just so many things, it's just so many things that's been happening just this past week, is that we're opening our first 200-hour teacher training for yoga at Karma Teachers. And then a big portion of it is just going to be scholars.
That's fantastic.
So we're going to be able to offer... Teacher training has become so expensive. And I understand it.
But...
Yeah, it's become so expensive, so we're going to be doing some scholars. And a teacher came to me.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is April, and she said she wanted to do it for Karma.
Wow.
And I was kind of like, really? Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So we're... And so people that can't afford it's going to be really low cost, but we're going to be I'm going to be announcing it tomorrow.
That sounds fantastic. So for anybody who wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way? Would it be through Karma Teachers, the website?
Yes, or? They can go to www.karmateachers.com.
Perfect.
They can also email at info@karmateachers.com or our Facebook page is really active. Just go just Facebook Karma Teachers. They can go to Twitter or they can call me. Yeah.
That's so awesome. Yeah. Thank you and congratulations with everything.
Oh, thank you for having me here.
You're welcome. So, everybody, check out karmateachers.com and please support the upcoming campaign. I think it's pretty awesome. It's really important to give and have a breath practice as well. It's good for your sexuality, your soul, and your spirit. And up next is Hans von Klaus's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with. He'll be guiding you through the wee hours with his rockstar awesome music. And I just wish you could see his shoes because he's always got the best shoes and gives me the best tips about shopping as well, which he's so awesome. Anyway, you've been listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be back next week at the Sexy Hour of 10 o'clock. Have a beautiful night, everyone. Bye-bye.
Hi, my name's Matthew. When I first got back from a military tour in Afghanistan, anytime I heard a siren or even a car alarm, I'd lose it completely. I would turn into a wild man, screaming, waving my arms. People would yell at me, "Shut up, you crazy. Get a job, would ya?" Well, I didn't go out and get a job. I got help instead. Now, I'm in a clean and safe apartment. I have friends and helpers who understand me.